May it please the court. My name is Britta Stunkard, registration number 41572, and I'm here on behalf of Mr. Fry. With the court's permission, I intend to reserve some of my time for rebuttal. The only issue before the court today is the district court's refusal to give Mr. Fry a hearing on his CRIM P35C motion, even though Mr. Fry has asserted facts supported by corroborating documentation that, if true, indicate Mr. Fry continues to remain incarcerated despite having fully served his sentence. As this court is well aware, a defendant is entitled to a hearing on his post-conviction motion if, after assuming everything he alleges is true, it appears he's entitled to relief. In this case, Mr. Fry has asserted that he is entitled to relief in the form of immediate release because he should have the right to enforce a promise made to him by the head of the Colorado Parole Department to credit his parole for time spent incarcerated in Texas. And when this time is added to the time already served, that five-year term of mandatory parole has been discharged. Although a defendant need only assert, not establish, a right to relief in his initial 35C motion, Mr. Fry has in fact provided significant documentation corroborating his claim that Colorado promised to run his parole while he was in Texas, and that he is entitled to specific performance of that promise. First, attached to Mr. Fry's motion is a letter from his Texas attorney verifying that the attorney contacted the head of the Colorado Parole Department, who apparently agreed to run Mr. Fry's parole concurrent with his Texas sentence, and that this promise served as the consideration for Mr. Fry's Texas guilty plea. Second, Mr. Fry included a letter from the DOC Interstate Compact Office, and although, as I argued in my brief, this letter stands alone as a basis for a hearing, the letter is also consistent with the existence of a promise by Colorado to run Mr. Fry's parole while he was in Texas.
How is it consistent with that? Where does it mention that promise at all in the letter from the whoever it was from, but not the letter from his attorney, but the letter from the, somebody in the parole department? Where does it talk about a promise at all?
Yes, Your Honor. The letter does not, as you say, explicitly mention the promise, but a lot of the facts of the letter are very consistent with that. For instance, the timing of the letter, it was sent after the time of the promise. The letter was sent to Mr. Fry in Texas, which accords with his assertion that Colorado knew where he was and no longer had him on absconder status. The letter states that upon direction from DOC time computation, Mr. Fry's discharge date was November 3rd, 2009.
Does the fact that they knew where he was mean he wasn't on absconder status? If he's not back here on parole, he's on absconder status, no matter whether they knew where he was or not.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it's clear, based on this record, how absconder status works. In an affidavit from a woman in DOC time computation, Ms. Carlson, which is part of the record at page 249, she says that when a person is on absconder status, apparently no discharge date can be calculated. Yet Mr. Fry has a letter from DOC Interstate Compact Office that was directed to them by time computation, which does calculate a discharge date for Mr. Fry. And in fact, the letter acknowledges Mr. Fry had previously absconded. It says that his 2009 discharge date would not change because of his previous absconds. And the letter actually specifically mentions a time before his first abscond, which implies that the letter had acknowledged that both absconds had already happened. So the fact that the Interstate Compact Office is, based on direction from time computation, calculating a discharge date indicates that Mr. Fry's parole was running at that time and that he was no longer on absconder status.
Let me ask you about that date in that letter. It mentions a date, but it certainly doesn't say how it's calculated. Do you have any idea where that November 3rd, 2009 date comes from?
Your Honor, I don't. Pretty much all of the facts, although some of the facts are undisputed, for instance, when Mr. Fry is paroled, it's not at all clear based on this record when his absconder statuses begin and end, how absconder status is calculated. Those are all disputed material facts, and we don't know the answer, frankly, because we never had a hearing in this case. That's why we're here today, because Mr. Fry needs a hearing to resolve whether, in fact, he has discharged his sentence, because based on the record before us and the legal standard, which is to assume his statements in the light most favorable to him, it appears that he has fully served his sentence, either based on this letter from the Interstate Compact Office, which at best is disputed, or because it appears that Mr. Fry is entitled to specific performance of a government promise, which his Texas attorney verifies in a letter which is in the record.
Ask you a couple questions about the letter from the Texas lawyer. There's a couple of sentences that you highlight in your brief, but one of them I don't even understand, and I don't understand how it could rise to the level of stating what this supposed promise or agreement is. It says, per my conversation with this person, we informed him that you're planning to plead in Texas, and then here's the language, but only if your Colorado case would run concurrent with any time you might receive in Colorado. That seems to me circular and is totally meaningless.
Your Honor, I mean, I agree that it's less than clear.
Well, it certainly doesn't say anything about a deal in Texas, the kind of agreement that you are alleging occurred here.
Excuse me, Your Honor. I believe it provides enough of a basis at this stage, which is we're just trying to determine whether Mr. Fry is entitled to a hearing. The attorney's letter is less than clear. What we really need is Mr. Martindale to come in at a hearing and explain exactly what was said by the person he spoke to in Colorado parole. And I think it's really important here, Your Honor, to determine what Mr. Martindale told Mr. Fry about what Colorado said, because it's what the question, at least in terms of specific performance, is whether he reasonably and detrimentally relied. And it is very dependent on what he believed it was. And we right now have Mr. Fry's allegations, which in his motion, he states that his attorney told him that the head of the Colorado Parole Department promised to give him that credit. That's clearly Mr. Fry's understanding of what the conversation was. At best here, we have something that's less than clear. We need a hearing to determine what exactly the conversation was. I believe, based on Mr. Fry's assertion that he's met his burden of asserting facts that, if true, indicate he is entitled to the relief he is requesting, which means that Mr. Fry should have been given a hearing to determine whether, in fact, he's being wrongfully detained. But I want to talk about the state's argument that Mr. Fry is not entitled to a hearing because the record refutes his allegations. It's important to note that the state places most of its support for this argument on one affidavit written by Ms. Carlson in DOC time computation. Because this affidavit does nothing more than highlight exactly why we need a hearing in this case. As an initial matter, the affidavit is inherently unreliable because it contains factual errors, errors which, as Mr. Fry pointed out in his reply below, are themselves refuted by the record. For instance, Ms. Carlson states that Mr. Fry was arrested in Texas on February 20th, 2008, yet the warrant for that arrest, which is in the record, plainly indicates that Mr. Fry was arrested December 27th, 2007. Additionally, Ms. Carlson states that Mr. Fry's second absconder period began on October 31st, 2007, yet the record doesn't support that. Indeed, Mr. Fry disputes that that's the case and states that indeed he was meeting with his Colorado parole officer up until at least mid-December of that year. For the purposes of determining whether Mr. Fry is entitled to a hearing, it's his word that must be credited, not to mention that these are disputed facts that require a hearing in order to resolve. In addition to being unreliable, Ms. Carlson's affidavit leaves unresolved a number of questions essential to the issue of whether Mr. Fry has completed his sentence. Questions such as I mentioned before, how exactly does absconder work? When does it begin? When does it end? And why? When did it begin and end for Mr. Fry? Why, as I mentioned before, does Ms. Carlson state that Mr. Fry remains an absconder and therefore no discharge date can be calculated, while at the same time DOC Interstate Compact Office sends Mr. Fry a letter in Texas stating that upon direction from time computation, his discharge date is November 3rd, 2009, a date that won't change because he had previously twice absconded. And finally, why does Ms. Carlson state that Mr. Fry is only entitled to credit spent in Colorado custody, where, by her own calculations, Mr. Fry received credit for time spent in at least two jurisdictions outside of Colorado.
I'm sorry, counsel, I hope at some point during your presentation you'll address the AG's concern that under section 1722.5402, that under the statute, he could not make the agreement that he's supposed to have made here. It couldn't be binding.
Certainly, Your Honor. I understand that the statute says that the time that he receives credit for will exclude any time he may have been at large by reason from escape therefrom. However, the very next sentence or clause in that is, unless he is pardoned or otherwise released by legal authority. And in this case, we have two members of DOC with conflicting statements about whether Mr. Fry receives the credit or doesn't receive the credit. And even setting that material dispute aside, in the case of enforcing a promise made by a government official, it is sufficient that the promise is made by someone with apparent authority. And in that case, and in this case, it appears that that's exactly what's happened here.
Let me interrupt you for a moment. Which clause are you relying on? Unless he is pardoned, I assume you're not relying on that because he was not pardoned.
No.
And so are you relying on otherwise released by legal authority?
Your Honor, I'm not relying on the statute at all. It's not clear to me. The statute does not mention absconder status or how it's calculated. It simply mentions escape. Mr. Fry has never been charged with escape or convicted of escape. And what I believe the statute does indicate is that there are exceptions to this. You can be released by legal authority, and in this case, it appears that he was promised just that. And really, it's irrelevant for Mr. Fry whether normally a person on absconder status wouldn't receive this credit, because in fact, he was promised he would receive that credit, and he detrimentally relied on that promise. And in this case, specific performance is the only remedy.
I can understand why, if we were the Texas court and he hadn't received the benefit of his plea bargain in Texas, that you would be making that argument to us, but I don't understand how it applies to us in Colorado. He didn't detrimentally rely on something in Colorado.
With all due respect, Your Honor, he did detrimentally rely on something in Colorado. The head of the Colorado Parole Department promised to credit his parole for time he was incarcerated in Texas, and because of that promise, he pled guilty in Texas.
I'm sorry, switching gears on you again and going back to the statute. Is it your contention that the statute just isn't applicable to this particular circumstance?
It's my contention that we don't know how the statute is applicable to this particular circumstance, because all of the facts concerning Mr. Fry's absconder status are disputed and unresolved on the record before us.
Is that really right? He doesn't dispute that he absconded twice. I mean, that seems to be conceded in the briefs.
No, he does dispute that he absconded twice. His argument is that he was meeting with his parole officer up until mid-December. He went to Texas where he was arrested, and thereafter Colorado knew where he was the entire time. He spoke to the head of the Colorado Parole Department, who agreed to run his parole concurrent. He got a letter from the Interstate Compact Office, which confirmed his belief that his parole was still running.
Is this the first alleged absconding or the second you're talking about?
The second.
What about the first time? He was in New Mexico and then he wasn't there.
Right. It appears that Mr. Fry has conceded that he absconded that first time. But what's not clear from the record is how that time, the absconder period, is actually calculated. We have Ms. Carlson's statement, but as I mentioned, there are aspects of her affidavit that are just plainly erroneous. I don't think we can rely simply on this affidavit to resolve the question of whether Mr. Fry was entitled to a hearing. That's exactly the type of thing that can be resolved at the hearing. Ms. Carlson can come in and explain how she got the dates she got, how it was calculated. Mr. Fry would have an opportunity to cross-examine her. All of these issues would be fleshed out. All we have before us right now are Mr. Fry's allegations, which are supported by documentation, and at best, a conflicting letter from DOC time computation, which raises a material dispute that we can't resolve without a hearing in this case.
Where is he now?
He is in Colorado. He's in the custody of DOC.
In the penitentiary?
He's in community corrections.
So he's not on parole.
He is on parole. This entire time that we're talking about is parole time. Starting, I believe, June 6, 2003, Mr. Fry had discharged his sentence and began serving his five-year term of mandatory parole. He served that five-year term both in DOC custody and out on parole. He has not been paroled. He's been, in fact, it's not clear to me what has happened. All I know is that I believe he's been transitioned into community corrections. His parole has been denied.
Your time is up, counsel. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Christine Brady, registration number 24779, representing the people. The definition of abscond is to be absent from an approved residence, and that's on the DOC website, and it's also on the Interstate Commerce website. So when the defense says it's unclear when the defendant had absconded or if he had that second time, the fact that he was in Texas means that he had absconded. Now, I believe he said in his pro se post-conviction motion that started these proceedings that he had not absconded because it wasn't time for him to report in yet. But reporting in is just one of the reasons why they list, you didn't report, so we can revoke your parole. They can also revoke your parole if you're not at your approved residence. And by virtue of the fact that he was in Texas, he obviously was not in his approved residence in Colorado. The first time that he was paroled, he was paroled under the Interstate Commerce.
But does the abscond status change when Colorado knows where he is and he's in custody in another jurisdiction?
It doesn't matter when Colorado knows where he is. They just need to eventually find out where he's been. So it's not connected with when he reports, I'm in Texas, I'm no longer in Colorado. It's when he actually left.
No, I'm talking about when he becomes in custody in Texas. Is he still on the absconder status?
Yes, he is. And that was addressed in the Attorney General's response, the attorney that represents the Department of Corrections, the response that's in the record, that he was still on absconder status. While he was serving his term in Texas, he was still an absconder. And I wanted to point out about the Interstate Commerce letter. Sure.
When the official sent a letter which indicated when his term would be up, was he on absconder status then, or had the absconder status terminated?
Okay, two things there. First of all, the answer to your question is yes, he was still an absconder because he had never come back to Colorado, even at that point. He filed his 35C when he was in prison in Texas, or jail, I believe he said he served it in jail.
But then how could the Colorado authorities give a specific date as to when he would be completing his parole term?
They could not. So,
but that letter?
Correct. So the letter you're referring to, that first letter from the Interstate Commerce, the parole, that letter had nothing to do with how much of his absconder status, how much of his absconder time had run. It had to do with earned time. And if you read the letter, all it talks about is earned time. Earned time is actually has nothing to do with the time that you're serving a sentence when you've either absconded or even if you're serving the sentence. Earned time is a separate statute. And if the defendant takes classes, he can get time towards his sentence. And I believe it's 30 days every 6 months. It's all about fulfilling those requirements. Earned time doesn't have anything to do with the running of parole.
Well, Was this all brought forth in the defendant's motion?
The answers I'm giving you here are all in the district attorney's, I'm sorry, the attorney general's response that's in the record, that was attached to our briefs.
So related to that question, do you have any clue about where this November 3, 2009 date comes from?
I don't have any clue, and the Department of Corrections actually does not have any clue. It was an incorrect date.
I know you say that in your brief, but how do we know that, whether it's correct or... I mean, I try to figure it out. I don't have a clue how that date is calculated.
Right. The answer to that is the Department of Corrections gets to calculate. It's an agency, and we have to defer to their calculations. And unless we can show that some kind of misconduct or something that they did was wrong, then we have to defer to their calculations. Here, that calculation in that first letter, it's unknown what the Interstate Commerce Department, where they got that from. It's clear that they were referring to your earned time does not change.
I take it your argument is that regardless of whether that date, where that date came from, it didn't take into account the whatever absconder status he has.
No, not in the way of serving the sentence. It said that the date that you have, the November date, if you're trying to take earned time off of that, you cannot do that when you're on absconder status. That's all that that letter says. So,
but doesn't it say this is the date and it will not change, and the all the facts were before that state agency when they made that statement?
It says based on your absconds, you are not eligible to receive earned time. So the discharge date provided above will not change, and it would have been clearer if they had said, comma, based on any earned time.
But, oh, I see. You're saying that when they say discharge date, they don't really mean discharge date. They mean it in a limited sense. Is that what you're saying?
They mean it in regard to if, defendant, you are asking, do you get earned time for the time you were on absconder status? You do not. Therefore, that date does not change. And it even goes on to say, we're giving you a copy, a printout of the earned time you received prior to absconding. So ostensibly, this November 3, 2009 had to do with how much earned time he had to his credit before he absconded.
Well, if you take that letter and the letter from the Texas attorney,
correct,
which indicates that he's considering entering a plea of guilty in Texas if certain conditions are met in Colorado, right? I mean, that's basically what the Texas lawyer said.
Right.
If that actually is true, that's pretty significant that he enters a plea with an understanding of what the Colorado authorities are going to do.
The letter from the Texas attorney is not related to, it doesn't have anything to do with the Interstate
Commerce. With that other letter, okay. I understand that.
So the letter from the Texas attorney says they made a phone call, they tried to talk to the parole officer, never talked to the parole officer, talked to somebody else. They don't know who they talked to. And based on information that that person gave them, yes, the defendant decided to plead in Texas. But the case that defense is relying on to argue that this was some kind of promise is the Manning case, which is actually nothing like the facts in this case. In the Manning case, there were named detectives who did in fact make a promise. And the only issue there was, did the detective have authority to make the promise? And in that case also, which is very different from here, there was some kind of reason for the promise. There's no reason for the promise here, because once the defendant had absconded, his parole could be revoked. There was no benefit for him to...
I understand what you're saying, in that if what we were to decide here is whether or not he has fully served his time, you're saying that these documents are unclear. But that's not why we're here today. We're here today to see if he was entitled to a hearing, or whether all the documents which were before the district court would have cleared this matter up. And based on this argument, I'm not convinced that anything is clear in this case.
In order to be entitled to a hearing, the defendant can't just present a bunch of confused letters and say, we just want to hash all this out at the hearing. In order to be entitled to a hearing, the defendant has to show that if the things he says are true, he's entitled to relief. There's nothing in either one of these letters that would entitle him to relief.
Anybody actually put in the plea agreement from the most recent Texas charge, or the transcript of what I guess would have been a providency hearing down there, to see what anybody said in Texas about this supposed agreement?
None of that is in the record.
Ms. Brady, can you please address 1722.5402?
Yes. I believe Your Honor has already discussed that, and basically what it says is it's statutorily illegal to make the promise that the defendant here is claiming was made to him. It says that the computation excludes any time the inmate is on absconder status, unless he's, I'm sorry, it says escape status, same thing, unless he's pardoned or released by legal authority. There's been no legal authority that's released him.
What does release mean in the statute?
Release means a discharge of the sentence.
And how do we know that escape and absconding are the same thing?
Because when you are no longer at your approved residence, you have escaped. As a matter of fact, even if you're at your approved residence, but you fail to report, that's an escape as well. If there are no further questions, the people would ask that you deny the relief to the defendant that he requests.
Thank you, Ms. Brady. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. Not sure everything is totally clear, but we'll take it from there, I guess. The matter will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course.